done.
Hi, I'm Dave Champion.
And I'm Bill Carnes.
And together we are
Totally Unprepared.
All right, now, keeping with the title of the show, the theme Totally Unprepared, Bill and I actually have lunch together every day before we do this show, and we decide on a very impromptu basis what we're going to talk about on the show. And so for this first segment, we have no idea.
We truly are totally unprepared.
We were looking at some stories, and one that caught my eye was the one about sperm washing. No, we should probably let that one go.
Is there dirty sperm? I didn't read the article, so I don't know. But that question,
yeah,
sperm,
yeah, sperm washing. I don't know.
And then maybe it's sperm whales that are. Who knows? Wash the sperm whale?
No, it was. I think it has to do with
the reproductive. HIV. Oh, yeah.
All right, but then, much more important than sperm washing, we saw the article about the bartender who wanted to off the Speaker of the House.
Yes.
Whose name is pronounced?
It's, a lot of people call him John Boehner. I've actually seen video where he has corrected people and said it's pronounced Boehner.
Huh.
Yeah, which is, I guess, people want to avoid that. I know a guy whose last name is Boehner, mm-hmm. but he pronounces it Bonner. His father pronounced it Bonar. His mother pronounced it Boehner. Just because we want to get away from the whole Viagra and Cialis thought of the idea on the pronunciation. So there's John Boehner for you.
And we don't want to feed into the elementary school sense of humor.
Well, of course not, because we could spend the entire hour doing that.
Talking about John Boehner.
Which, by the way, I have to say, it's kind of interesting. Just before we started, Dave pulled this out. Dave, would you care to demonstrate?
Yes. This, as you probably know if you've been watching the show, this is new. And it's kind of in that wild and woolly phase. It's not long enough to hang down, so it's kind of doing this now. So I did a little of that. I thought Bill was going to die.
I'm like, what is that thing? This is like one of those combs that you get with a teddy bear, right? It's a prop.
I think
maybe Ken had it from the 1977, Ken, when his hair was feathered and he was doing this.
You know what I think that actually came with years ago? I used to, like, give myself a crew cut. And I had you buy the little thing, it comes in like the miniaturized briefcase, it's got the clipper.
Oh yeah, with the clippers and all. Yeah.
And I believe this came in there, and of course I haven't had hair in God knows how long, but I think that's where that came from. So
tatted, I'm just sort of tatted up, bald head.
That's right.
With the little, whatever that's called, is that the Fu Manchu's
no,
out
this
here,
is actually
it?
Called, I've heard so many things. Technically, it's called a chin puff. But it has been dubbed by my friends.
That is so cute.
It has been dubbed by my friends, and one especially who is native-born from Egypt, the Pharaoh look.
It's better than chin puff.
No,
the Pharaoh look is way, I mean, those are on opposite ends of the spectrum.
At least the Pharaoh thing might be a little malice. Yeah, the chin puff.
The chin puff over here and the Pharaoh look.
All right, so let's talk about this guy who's in custody for threatening to kill John Boehner.
Yeah, this guy's a bartender at a country club that evidently the speaker goes to on a regular basis, and he started having voices in his head and slipping from one mental phase to another, and I guess thought about poisoning his drink.
Yeah. Well,
and then telling him about it or something, announcing that's what is his intention.
You know, I just browsed the story, but it appears that
bartender Mike is what they call
exactly
him.
So.
Bartender Mike.
It appears everything was cool until the country club fired him. Now, of course, my understanding is the firing had nothing to do with John Boehner. The country club fired him probably because he's hearing voices. But then he said something. He contacted Boehner's wife, and he said that he doesn't want to hurt the speaker, but he needs to arrange a meeting between Boehner, the head of the country club, and him for an honest conversation about why he was dismissed. And then he goes on to talk about how, you know, I've had plenty of opportunity in the last 5 years to poison John Boehner if I wanted to. And He's in custody now.
Didn't he suggest that he's the new Jesus Christ or something like that?
Oh, yeah, he thinks he's Jesus Christ.
So, first of all, Jesus doesn't serve hard liquor. He serves wine when you ask for water.
No, creates it. Yeah, there you go, right.
Yeah,
right,
okay, right. Can I get a glass of water? Yeah, here's some wine, all right? And on top of that, if you read the bumper stickers, Jesus loves everybody. Why would he want to kill John Boner? I mean, why would Jesus want to kill John Boner? I can understand why some others may want to. Those are more politically active.
Yes.
But Jesus, I don't know what party he belonged to back in the day.
No, libertarian.
My man.
Now, speaking of religion.
I'm sorry. My son of God.
Another another story that it's disturbing, but yet it makes me laugh in the same vein. We all know what happened in Paris last week, right?
Yes.
And that what was interesting is the day after the shooting at Charlie Hebdo, the satirical newspaper. The remaining staff were committed to getting the paper out to honor their dead colleagues. Okay? They were like, we're not going to let this stop us. If these nutballs wanted to stop us, we're not going to let that happen. And they went ahead and published. And of course, it had more of the satirical cartoons about Muhammad and the mocking and so forth. Sold out. Everywhere it went, sold out like never before.
Yeah, right? I tried to actually find a copy of it online and I couldn't find one.
Yeah. So now there's this imam in Britain, and his name is Ahmed Chowdhury.
Chowderhead?
I read the album, Chowderhead. So now this guy,
Abdul Chowdhury.
When he was in the university, he used to drink alcohol and party and have sex with girls. And there's pictures of him partying and drinking and stuff. And
okay.
He's actually tried to, like, sue to have those pictures taken down to people's stuff. Right. I mean, yeah. And supposedly he went to law school and he tried to get some big position with one of the top London law firms. And they turned him down. And it was only after that that he got really interested in fundamental Islam. And
now, was he a Muslim during these college days?
Ostensibly, yes.
Okay. I'm wondering if maybe he, like, in somebody finds God in prison. Maybe he found Allah in corporate failure.
No. Yeah. I think he was Muslim all along, but he didn't get... He was Muslim like a lot of people are Christian.
Oh, all right. Sure.
Until he couldn't secure this position that he wanted, like his whole career path.
Amino, Muslim in name only.
Yes.
And then
he became like this disaffected wannabe high class lawyer, and that didn't. So all of a sudden he went to fundamental Islam and became an imam.
Do you name yourself imam, or is there like imam you?
I
imam,
don't know.
Imam school?
I think it's like.
Is it imam or imam?
I think it's like a position. Like, you know, when you become the pastor at a church or the youth pastor, I think imam, when you take a position at the mosque, I think it's
like if you're a deacon or a...
Yeah, I don't think you can just walk down the street and say, huh, today I choose to be an imam.
Yeah, but I mean, is there a school you have to go through? Okay, you can, you know, pass this test. You know, we're going to ask you about
these. It's the school where they teach you about explosives and detonate. I'm sorry, that one. Okay, but here's the funny thing, right? This guy is like, he says that Charlie Hebdo publishing again the next day with more mocking and more cartoon versions of Muhammad is an act of war and a direct attack on Islam.
Wait, right? A newspaper in his mind declared war on Islam.
Yes, this is what he says. You know,
wow. Because I saw a restaurant one time that declared war on Buddhism. It was just like a little two-man, it was one of those trucks that you drive up to,
yeah.
One of those roach coaches.
Yeah.
Yeah, they declared war on, how stupid.
I know. You know, in my thing is, look.
What a chowderhead.
Hey. Yeah. Hey, chowderhead, here's the deal, okay? Let me be clear about this. This guy, Muhammad, he is not the prophet of Allah. Okay, let me be very clear about that. He's just a dude, okay?
Who invented Islam one night in a cave.
Yeah, and by the way...
If you actually read the history, he invented Islam in a cave one
night. Yeah, and by the way, I'm not busting the balls of Islam. I mean, there was no guy named Job. Isaiah wasn't talking to some guy in the sky. I mean, it's whether you're talking about the Old Testament, whether you're talking about the New Testament, whether you're talking about the Quran, whether you're talking about whatever, like the Hindus, whatever. It's nonsense. It's nonsense. So what kills me is it's like... You get these guys like Chowderhead.
Did you just feel that?
What's that?
Some of the channels changed. Did you feel that? I said, click, click. As if there's still a dial.
Yes, yes.
I'm pantomiming the dial.
Oh, believe me, on my show when I talked about religion, I was getting reports about people turning off, from other people in the household, people emailing me saying, you know, yeah, my wife turned the television off, my husband walked out of the room, you know, so yeah. Which was crazy because it's like me saying, you know, Bill, Harry Potter is totally awesome. And Alice in Wonderland? That's stupid.
I know, Allison.
And you're getting mad at me. I mean, it's just crazy. So, but anyway, for Chowderhead, right? You know, it's like, now he's all worked up about this thing that he believes is true. He believes Muhammad is the prophet of Allah. He believes there is an Allah.
I believe this guy's a Chowderhead.
He believes that there is an Allah, right? Okay. Some magical guy in the sky and all this, you know. And now he also believes they should go kill people because they don't buy into Chowderhead's fantasy. So wait a second. Wait, I have something for Chowderhead.
Okay.
Chowderhead, look at me. All right. So, we're going to blur that right here.
That's right.
Yeah, right that time sequence in
the booth.
The engineer is in there trying to figure out how do I blur that now.
There's a minute and 45 seconds left in the segment. We got to go back.
Hey, yeah. It's okay, Noah, because most of the people in Pahrump do not care if I do that to Chowderhead, all right? All right. Perhaps I should have said, have your children leave the room, then done it. What do you think?
All right. We'll blur it out like it's a...
Engineers, give me the thumbs up on that one.
Yeah, well, you know, Chowderhead and Chowderhead followers. If you're following somebody by the name of Chowderhead, I mean, do a little research. I don't follow people by the last name of douchebag either, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
So, Chowderhead, please, keep in mind, if you believe this and you believe that and you believe the other, and because of those beliefs that people should go out and kill other people, imagine if, say, anybody else in this country believes one, two, or three things about you and the Chowderheads that you should be killed. Or even he's in Europe somewhere, right? So it'd be more appropriate for that.
He's in the UK.
It's a French satirical newspaper. The only thing they could possibly know how to do is surrender. They don't have guns. I mean, you read the old article about French rifle never fired.
Only dropped once.
You know? I mean, come on. You pull up the history of French victories, and it shows over the last 250 years nothing but French defeats. I mean, come on. It's a French newspaper.
Well,
Let's get it together.
Napoleon had some success against the French.
Yeah, yeah. Imagine. Yeah, within himself.
All right, so when we come back from the break, it's going to be my turn up to talk about what I want to discuss and rant about in today's show. So we'll be back right after these words. Don't go away.
Dave.
Oh, we're on? All right, well, we're back, and now it's time for... All right, now... Oftentimes, when we do this segment, it's me ranting about something. Not so much today. This is more of bringing up a subject, question marks, concerns. I don't have all the answers, so let me tell you what the subject is. I have noticed an explosion in America of unwed mothers having children. And by unwed, I don't mean to take the moralistic perspective. What I mean is, whether there's mom and dad are not in the same household. Okay? That's what I mean. I don't care whether people are married or not. That's neither here nor there to me. Nor do I care if it's mom and dad and dad. I'm not making any sort of statements about those sort of cultural activities or issues. I am talking about where a child is raised in a home where there is nobody taking the, we'll call it the masculine role. Now, I don't have all the answers. I want to be very crystal clear about that. I look at, historically, the black community, which I think, I'm sorry, let me rephrase that, the black inner city urban environment, which I think has been decimated by fathers not being in the home of children. However, I don't want to extend that too far outside that setting because the circumstances in the inner city urban environment, which are far greater than not having dad at home, may have created sort of a perfect storm for creating, youth, young males that get involved in a lot of things they shouldn't get into. My concern is that there are elements of that that we're going to see as the rest of society adopts this pattern. And let me explain what I mean. Statistics show that the white segment of America has had a dramatic increase in children being born to mothers where there is no father in the home. And behind that, we then, so those numbers are coming up. And then we look at the Hispanic community and we see their numbers coming up, not quite percentage-wise, not as high as the white community, but increasing dramatically from what has historically been the model for Hispanics. So what I'm looking at and what I'm concerned about and what I'm questioning, we see this thing that's been going on for, say, 20, 30 years in the inner city black community where there's been a lot of children born with no man in the household, and we're seeing a lot of crime and violence. A lot of black youth in jail or getting killed and so forth, a lot of violence. Then we see now the white community start to adopt that same model where a lot of women are having babies and there's no dad in the home. But it's a much newer phenomenon, so will it produce the same outcome? And, of course, we see it then in the Hispanic community, again, a growing phenomenon. Will it produce the same phenomenon? Now, the reason that I'm concerned is, if it does produce the same phenomenon, if failure to have a masculine figure in the home active with a male child, if it produces in the white community and the Hispanic community the same dynamic that it has produced in the black inner city urban communities, no bueno. Big problem. And as I said, I don't have all the answers. This is really more of a discussion. So, Bill, what do you think? What are your thoughts on that?
I believe that the blue communities, specifically the Keebler Elves and the Na'vi, do not experience this as a society just yet. Even though the Smurfs are living in the trees, they are still in a family orientation. And, of course, the Na'vi are much taller, living outside of trees, not in the nuts.
The Na'vi, these are from Avatar, I believe?
Yes, okay, yes, just, yes. Just... By the way, they taste like chicken. So... you know what's interesting, Dave, a little bit more serious about this. We don't seem to see this in the Asian communities.
Not as much.
No, we really
no,
don't.
No.
And I'll tell you, when it comes down to the thoughts of, you know, why is it happening, how's it going, what's going to be the effect, I tell you my thoughts on how to preserve the family unit and start bringing this to a close.
Okay.
And that is for the government to stop issuing money to single parents simply because they're single parents.
Yes.
If they were to begin to curb that down and eventually stop it, then it's more incumbent upon having a family together rather than having children for financial reasons. Mm-hmm. And some people might say, oh, that's a racist claim, which is ridiculous. It's a ridiculous assertion. It's the truth. It's the truth that you actually have people say, in this case, women who are getting some form of government assistance, some sort of welfare and beyond from several different government sources. And they claim, look, I can get a bigger house. I can get more stuff if I have another baby. So they go out and they go daddy shopping. You know, I don't really care who it is. Just whoever's genes can work with mine and create a baby, that's good. It'll work out. And, you know, it's ridiculous. If we start curbing that down and eventually eliminate it, except for those people who fit a very narrow definition of assistance, and it is temporary. If you are able to hold employment or to even create a business and create your own income, if you are physically able to do that, there should be something behind that, actually doing it.
Yeah.
So I think these sort of things would curb down if they were less tolerated by the finances stemming from all levels of government, from you know, local little townships up to the federal government.
Sure. And by the way, I do agree the idea that a woman has a baby so the government gives her money is absurd. However, let's look at it from a slightly different angle. Let's say that a slew of women, a high percentage of women who don't have men in the home, were financially comfortable and without government assistance could find somebody, as you so eloquently phrase it, whose genes work together to make a baby. And yet, once the woman was pregnant, she had no more use for the man and sent him down the road because she wanted his...
And some women want to be a single mother. And that's okay, too.
It is okay. Perhaps it's okay. And here's why I say perhaps. And I'm not damning single mothers. Okay, let me be very clear about this. There's women are single mothers for a whole myriad of reasons. So I'm not in any way attacking or criticizing single mothers. But go back to my scenario where, let's say, they were financially comfortable to do this. And so they use the man for his genes and then send him down the road once she's pregnant. And now there's a baby in the home with the mom and there's no masculine figure in the home. The part that concerns me is, and I don't know the answer, but what concerns me is, are there inherently detrimental effects to the well-being of the male child, because that's the one who seems to be the most problematic, for society? Is there something inherently problematic about having a male child raised in a home without a masculine presence?
Potentially, I would say yes, and I'll give you an example of this. I've been married twice. I'm also divorced twice. I am not available. I have a longtime girlfriend for over 6 years now, so things are going well. So just so everybody understands. My second wife...
What are they going to understand?
I'm just saying. My second wife had a son from her first marriage.
Okay.
And I had a daughter from my first marriage. And they're 6 months apart, 5 months, 5.5 months apart, whatever it is. So I was raising a daughter. She was raising a son. Now, she was pretty much raising her son on her own. The dad was not around much, a little bit of visitation here and there. With my daughter, it was joint custody back and forth between her mother and I, which is my first wife. But she, my second wife, as being a single mother, was raising her son to be the perfect little gentleman. Mm-hmm. Which sounds to be nice. I mean, he's, you know, well-mannered, very respectful, and this, that, and the other. Essentially raising him to be a ninny. No woman wants the perfect gentleman. They want, I shouldn't say no woman wants that. As it goes in society, you want it to be a little mixed up, maybe a little unpredictable. I mean, you want somebody who's going to be there and be a good person.
Yeah.
But I am far from a perfect gentleman. As a matter of fact, that's one of the things that I love about my girlfriend is she knows about my imperfections. And I can be very gentlemanly. But at other times, I can be quite ungentlemanly if you get my drift. And I don't...
Fortunately, I don't get your drift.
You know how I am, Dave. I mean, we've been friends for several years now. So,
like more than a decade, if you can believe it. Now.
Yeah, it's one of these things where, like, I am the way I am, and I don't change myself. You and I have a friend mm-hmm. who used to live here, now lives back on the East Coast, an incredible handgun shooter. I think you know who I'm talking about.
I do.
And this is a guy who, in his first marriage... Yeah, he came out here. I mean, we're talking about a guy, you know, women say, you know, men are pigs. This guy was like in the mud, oinking it up.
When
he was
out.
I mean, just his language was out there. We're talking about a guy who was in the military, went to military school. I mean, he was a guy's guy, right?
Yeah.
And just there was no filter. Still today, there is no filter. But
in many situations.
I asked him one time, I said, this is when he was married to his first wife. He's now very happily married to his second wife. It's mm-hmm. been several years. And I said, does your wife know that this guy exists? He says, nope, not a clue. She was this petite, church-going Southern belle raised by her mother to be holier than thou and had no idea that this guy was who he was. And so he'd been living a lie.
Now, themselves in that boat.
I'm not. I am the way I am. But we're getting it back to this discussion. She was raising him to be a perfect little gentleman. I said, stop that. He's going to get beat up at school. He's not going to have a bunch of friends. Girls are not going to be very interested in this kid. Just stop it. He's a handsome kid. He's a bright kid. We're going to go out and we're going to go get in trouble.
Okay, but now hang on a second. This brings up my point. Where is the young man you're speaking of? Where is he going to, from where or from whom, is that boy going to acquire the masculine model?
That was the thing. Is it inevitably ended up being my responsibility for that.
Oh, he's in trouble.
Well, I mean, he's grown now. He's, what, 24 years old and doing great, living in Texas. He's a mechanic, making good money, had a couple of girlfriends, longtime girlfriends. I mean, he's a great, great kid. But, I mean, still, it's one of these deals where I'm like, look, you've got to stop raising him to be mommy's perfect little boy, because as he gets older, that's not going to be good for him. He's got to have some aggressive areas. I got him involved in Boy Scouts.
Oh,
he ended
good.
Up becoming an Eagle Scout. Just a great kid. I'm really, really proud of him.
Okay. So there's an example of somebody who was raised in the paradigm that I'm concerned about, who turned out, at least in part, thanks to you.
Yeah, because that paradigm came to an end.
Right, right. But turned out to be, as you say, a great kid, who's enjoying life and doing well. I wonder if that story is indicative of what we're going to see in 10 and 20 years.
Let's get some viewer emails on it.
Okay. When we come back, Bill Carnes is up. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
We're back for segment 3. And now it's time for... Okay, we have a timer on the desk, and we're over here. Dave said, you're in charge of the timer. So I'm like, all right. So now I look over, and he's pushing. It's not moving, Dave. So now I've lost it. This is what grinds my gears.
When I do this.
Yeah, it's fortune cookies. Whenever you're a kid, when I was a kid, man, I used to love going to eat Chinese food. It's interesting. Fortune cookies come from Chinese restaurants. However, now any restaurant that serves any sort of cuisine from the Orient, if you will, provides a fortune cookie. I kind of doubt they came from Japan or Taiwan or Laos or any of these other cuisines that you can get. However, if you get a cuisine from some sort of Asian country in the Orient, you're going to get a fortune cookie. One of the things I loved when I was a boy was going to a Chinese restaurant because of the fortune in the fortune cookie. The cookies themselves are not necessarily that good, which is another thing that grinds my gears. There's a couple of companies that make these fortune cookies, and they're really tasty. There's others, they really kind of suck. They are bland. And what does everybody do? They're not there to eat the stupid cookie. You get the cookie, you grab it, thumbs in the middle, fingers on the outside, inside of that little shoehorn, if you will, and you crack it open. And what do? You grab the piece of paper out, and you set down one, if not both pieces. You take the piece that's still in your hand, and you take a little nibble out of it as you open it up, turn it in the right direction, and read your fortune, right? Oftentimes spitting out whatever that cookie was because you happen to get a nasty one. But we're there for the fortune, and if we like it, what do we do with it? We keep it. Some of us put it in the wallet, or we'll take it home. Some people even, they'll put it on their pegboard or put it on their refrigerator until they get another good fortune, or maybe that one comes true or is disproven. But I'm really sick and tired of going to these Asian restaurants and getting a fortune cookie that has no fortune. So, this is not coffee or tea. This is a cup of fortune. These are just random samples. First of all, I would like to thank China Walk Restaurant. They've been saving these for me for the last day or so from people that would go in, read their fortune, and leave them on the table. So I have a big sampling of these. Dave, beauty is its various form in its various forms appeals to you. Is that a fortune?
No, it's an observation.
I believe that's an observation cookie. Let's grab another one here, just randomly. There's my daily numbers. Time is money. That's a statement cookie. This has nothing to do with your fortune. I want a little crystal ball on paper. Okay, that's a fortune cookie.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Are these even really cookies? Because to me, sort of the seminal quality of a cookie is that it's round and you bake it on a pie sheet.
There's no baked cookies, so perhaps they don't have to be baked. I don't know. It's an Asian cuisine. I have not gone back there and tried everything. They also eat weird fish. And here's something interesting on the back. It says daily numbers and your lotto numbers. Pay attention to these. Years ago, there was a case in New York where something like 140 some odd people won a particular lottery. And they went to investigate, how did 140 people, they all happened to play the back of the exact same fortune. Not all, these are not all different, folks. You get a dozen of these, you're going to read the same fortune six times. Okay. So let's see, you're heading in the right direction. Okay, that's not a fortune.
But sneaking up on it.
Yeah, it's kind of close. It's like on the leading edge of it. Dave, grab a couple of these. Tell me all what right. you think. Yeah, let's look into this.
Okay.
I want to know what these things say. Let's see. The job is well done. This is a post cookie, okay. Not a fortune cookie.
The numbers are not the only thing that are not different.
A past cookie.
Yes, because you just read that.
Oh, you had the same one.
Yes, it's the one about you are heading in the right direction.
This is actually missing some ink. I can't even read the whole thing.
A thrilling time is in your immediate future.
Okay, now that's a fortune.
Oh, that's right.
Why would someone leave this on the table and not take it with them?
Should I take this home and put
it
on my board?
It's yours now. Okay. I wish I would have read that one. Maybe I'll get one in a minute. God will give you everything that you want. That's a fortune.
That's a fortune.
Thank you, God. He's just going to give it to me? I'm holding on to this one.
All right.
It's ridiculous. Here, you are a bundle of energy, always on the go. Not a fortune. Not a fortune. Fortune cookie companies, I know you're in Chicago. I know you're not in Saipan or back in Beijing or something. I mean, you're in Salt Lake City, Utah, printing these things.
Okay. You have a deep interest in all things artistic.
Not a fortune.
Not a
That's
fortune.
An observation cookie. Be direct. Usually one can accomplish more that way. Okay. Well, I guess that's a guidance cookie. I've actually had one that just said love.
Okay.
That was a word cookie. I want a fortune.
This one. What does this even mean? You're a person of culture. Culture. Is that like... We have like the American culture, or does that mean I am cultured?
Maybe it means you deal in dairy.
Yeah,
perhaps. You lead a useful life no matter what riches are coming to you.
That means even if you have no riches is what that translates
I've
to.
I've had it. Look at this. Knock this off. There's a couple of fortunes in here.
Find release from your cares and have a good time. That's
just,
mine. That's the one I'll take home.
That's a good one.
Yeah, I like it.
Stop this, fortune cookie companies. Stop it. Give me fortunes. You could probably go online and search out various fortune ideas, or maybe go to a fortune teller and just like slip a little recording device in there for a day or two, and all the fortunes that they BS people into believing that they're going to get, take those and put them on paper, narrow them down and print those. But give me a crystal ball and a cookie. That's what I want. A crystal ball and my friggin' cookie. And hopefully it'll taste reasonably well.
I think people should start the fortune cookie company. I wonder if the companies that make the fortune cookies also make the fortune strips.
Okay.
Now, for the strips of paper, I think they should really start doing fortune stuff, such as... Last week, you made a baby.
That's what I'm talking about. Okay, so...
Can you imagine, you know, the guy or the gal sitting in the booth and...
I have to say, about 30 years ago, my father went to San Francisco on a business trip, and when he came back, he bought... No, 30 years ago. Thanks. He brought back, like, three huge bags of fortune cookies. And they were all dirty fortune cookies. Like, it's best not to have intimate relations with the chef's wife because he has a cleaver and he'll use it. But a little bit more...
risque?
Yes, than that. Yeah, a little bit more direct than that. And a lot of these things were hilarious. I mean, just funny. Not that you would find them in a restaurant.
Right, right.
You have to buy them and, like, dupe your friends.
Might go to that restaurant, though. Yeah,
it'd be like if you had that, you'd, like, buy Chinese food for a dinner party that you're having with some friends and take out the regular fortune cookies and slip those in there as a gag sort of thing. Or put them in, a stocking stuff or something.
How about great things like... again, the fortune thing. Open it up. You're going to be indicted by a federal grand jury next month.
Okay, you're kind of going down a negative path here. How about one like, if you actually play the lottery, your chances of winning have just increased by 100-fold. You know, that's
cool.
A statement. Well,
that's
no, that's unfortunate. If you do this, this is what you're going to get.
Okay.
All right? So no. I don't think that's a statement. Like, let me just randomly. Your beard comb is silly. Okay, that's a statement. That's a statement. I'm sure you're going to have one
no
over there.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
You're going to have one over there that says kiss my ass in a moment as a response. You are a bundle of energy, always on the go. I think I already had one of those. It's stupid. You will maintain good health and enjoy life. Okay, that's a fortune. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we've had four fortunes and we've read more than a dozen of these.
Okay, so you said I was going down negative. That you're right, but it was
more
like,
funny.
It was more of a, yeah, it's more for the effect of I'm imagining the person reading it like,
You know what would be a real funny one? Yeah. Duck!
Yeah. You're going to get a new card this year, you know.
Yeah.
You know, just at least something that bears upon fortune telling.
Yeah, and you know something? When you're baking these cookies and you're coming up, have somebody who doesn't have blind taste buds tasting these things. I mean, what's wrong with like a fortune cookie that's made of more like a sugar cookie and got little ultra microscopic little chocolate chips in it? I mean, is there something wrong with that? I know when I go to a Chinese restaurant here in the States that it is not the same food that I get at a Chinese restaurant in China.
Oh,
I've been to Mexico many times, and the Mexican food in Mexico is a lot different than even the authentic Mexican food here in the States. It is not the same. So something tells me that if it is some sort of secret couple different recipe batches of fortune cookie mix in this country, it doesn't have to be the same. And I kind of doubt if I go to Beijing, I'm going to be getting a cookie at the end of every meal. I have a feeling that we're kind of duped into believing that. Like gunfighters that met at high noon out in the street, there's never even a single historical incident of that happening. That was the spaghetti westerns that created that mistake.
Well, if you get a fortune cookie in China and you break it open, it probably says something like, you know, in the next few years, China will surpass the U.S. in economic power.
They already did last month.
I know.
Yeah, so that'd be a pass cookie.
Now, fortune cookies.
By the way, just quickly, do you know the largest English-speaking country in the world right now by population?
No.
China.
Really?
China. There are over a dozen world-class universities in the city of Shanghai already.
What?
Over a dozen, like, we're talking Yale's, or like the Big Ten, or, you know, just in the city of Shanghai.
Now, when we talk about fortune cookies, we're sort of along the same lines as fortune tellers.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Okay.
I call them BS artists.
True story, okay? A business that was dealing with advertising went to a fortune teller and said, here's our deal for advertising, you know, over the next year. And it's a true story. The response of the fortune teller was, I'd like to just do a 3-month contract because I don't know if this is going to work out.
That's perfect. You know, it's interesting. Harry Houdini, known one of the world's best magicians, illusionists, escape artists in the world. He used to do that. He used to be a fortune teller.
Really?
And yes, you're back years before he was successful doing magic and illusions. He was so against the fortune telling BS industry. When he would travel around and do his different things, he actually had guys on the payroll that he would have go out to find these people, and he was trying to get them prosecuted for fraud across the country, what? Knowing what their techniques were, because he used to do that sort of thing, like a Coney Island gag, if you will.
What?
So, to sum this up, fortune cookie companies, first, improve your recipe. Second, improve your statements, make them true fortunes. I want a glass ball in a cookie. Folks, we'll be right back right after these words. And welcome back. Now what we're going to do is we're going to talk a little bit about a subject that comes to us from our viewer email. And this comes from Barack O. in Washington, D.C. No, seriously. This comes from one of our viewers by the name of Nicholas. And he asks us, in general terms, and this is a very heavy question,
Very.
At what point in time do we take up arms against the U.S. government? Okay, so I got to say, first of all, Dave, you and I have both had some very serious shows in radio,
yes.
radio and TV, where we've talked about things like this.
Absolutely.
This show is not exactly geared towards that hardcore punch. I mean, we're having fun with this and trying to provide some information as well as an element of some entertainment in there as well. So I got to tell you, he's asking, when's the line in the sand when the next revolution comes? I think is really what it comes. What is the line in the sand? Because I don't think it's one of these deals where we're going to be talking to soldiers. No! No! Go get the gun! That's not the way it's going to work. Okay, we're not going to be your predictor and tell you when that time is. We might not be on the air at that time. And your line in the sand might be different than my line in the sand, which might be different than yours. Okay?
Yeah. Or, you know, like, okay, meet me at the Mason-Dixon line.
Yeah.
On January 27th at 2 o'clock. It's not going to happen.
So look.
Maybe that line is taking Sesame Street off the air.
You know, I got to say that this is getting to be more and more of a common theme. And I'll tell you my view on this is the Constitution exists to restrict the government. I've actually written an article, had it published with the Founding Defenders on this. There are 17 enumerated authorities. Okay, there are some enumerated rights, but the Constitution, the Founders, and the courts have all agreed to try to enumerate all of the rights would be an exercise in futility because it may never end.
Correct.
Okay. However, there are 17 authorities that the federal government has, and that's it. However, they've decided to legislatively provide themselves the authority for all kinds of stuff outside of that. And unfortunately, the courts have agreed to allow them to do that in far too many instances, doing things other than looking at the original intent of the Constitution, looking at the writings of the Founders, of the Federalist and Anti-Federalist Papers. They've refused to do that. Quite honestly, I think it's very judicially lazy. It's like, you know, you attorneys bring me your arguments and I'll base my opinion based on your arguments alone.
And what adds to this confusion is that there was a 1905 U.S. Supreme Court case, Downs v. Bidwell, in which the United States Supreme Court said that there are three different definitions of the United States. And for the purpose of this discussion, we'll just focus on two of them. And one is when the United States government legislates in its position as the national government for the states of the Union. Another meaning for United States is the governmental entity that controls the possessions and territories. Now, that might not be a grave distinction if the same rules applied, but the court was very clear in Downs that the exact opposite rules apply. When operating as a national government for the 50 states, the federal government is constrained by just the authorities it has been granted. When legislating for the possessions and territories, it's just the opposite. It can do anything it wants unless it has been expressly restricted from doing it. Okay? So in the states of the Union, for instance, the Ninth Amendment, right, that the enumeration of certain rights in the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, is not meant to disparage or deny other rights held by the people. Okay. So those rights are still a block to government action. Okay. Not so in the possessions and territories. And one of the big problems I see with federal congressional legislation is, despite that ruling by the court, there is no provision, either constitutionally or by common sense and practice, to have Congress declare when it passes legislation for which United States it's legislating.
Another problem that we have, Dave, is when we have courts that make a decision, they don't have a group of armed enforcers to force the other branches of the government to abide by that decision that they provide. They just don't have that. So getting back to my whole idea where the problem with this is the government has grown so much and they have provided themselves so much authority through legislation, through what I call legal but not lawful. And this is my definition. Lawful means it is within the bounds of the Constitution. Legal means it went through the process and hasn't necessarily been adjudicated as such.
It's simply a matter of law.
Yeah, it's a matter of law. It isn't necessarily lawful.
Yeah.
They went through the legal process.
And what I like to refer to, and I borrowed this from the legal profession, is the black letter of the law. The black ink on white paper.
Okay.
That doesn't make it so. It means there's black ink on white paper.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
So when we have a government that, in some cases you have this in local areas, I mean, look at Berkeley, California. I mean, in local areas they restrict things.
Yes.
In some states, I mean, look what the state of California has done. Look at the state of Hawaii has done with restrictive firearms, or Washington, D.C. My God. So when it comes down to it, when government starts painting everybody into a little corner so that they can control them or dictate to them how things are supposed to do, when you have to get a hold of the government and ask their permission to do something, something is fundamentally wrong. And we're all waking up to this. Unfortunately, in my opinion, we're waking up way too late. Our grandparents and great-great-grandparents should have woken up long ago. I look at it as though we had our Revolutionary War, okay? Then we had the War of 1812 to kind of solidify that because, you know, Great Britain wanted to come back in here and try their hand at it again. Didn't work out so well. Then we had the Civil War. And really, the Civil War was kind of the first constitutional crisis, if you will, where the arms were taken up. It was, look, we don't agree with this anymore. We, as these independent state nations, are going to leave this collective called the United States, and we are going to now start the Confederate States. We have our own constitution, our battle hymn, our president, our everything. We have all of this stuff. If you haven't read the Constitution for the Confederate States of America, I suggest going online and searching it. It's kind of interesting.
It's a good read.
Yeah. But they lost that. Okay, now it's a big status. It used to be these United States, and after the Civil War, it became the United States.
Right.
As it was a single entity instead of a group of entities all working together in concert for a common good for everybody. So I see that as really, that has manifested itself into people not liking what they're dealing with.
You know, and I think it bears upon what you said that, you know, generations before should have woken up and didn't. 30 years ago, I didn't hear a lot of this. I did not hear people saying, when is the day? In the last 10 years, abundantly, I hear that, I see this in news articles. What I think I saw a poll just about 6 months ago that 29% of the American people believe the only way to set this nation back on the correct track is through force of arms. 29%. Wow. Okay. That says we're never going to straighten this out unless we kill the people in the government. That's a pretty bold statement for 29% to make.
And keep in mind, Congress, when they left before Christmas time,
mm-hmm.
they left with a 16% approval rating,
mm-hmm.
where Bill Cosby had a 17% approval rating. Okay. So, but we still reelect 85% of these guys to 16%, let's call it for easy numbers, 15% approval, 85% of the people come back. That works out to 100% in the wrong direction.
But the system isn't rigged.
No, it's not rigged. And you know, my congressman or congresswoman is okay. My senator's okay. It's the rest of the bums that come from the other states that suck.
You mean the rest of my congressman and my senator who's giving stuff to me?
Yeah,
he's
yeah,
cool.
It's just...
But, you know, I think the most significant part of Nicholas's message is that he's asking the question. And it's representative of how many other people in America are asking the question. Now, you said something when we decided to discuss Nicholas's question at lunch. You said that brings us back to the age-old question, and I agree, and I've covered this on my show, which is, where is that line in the sand? And not only do you and I not have the magic answer, we don't have that crystal ball, and as you pointed out, we're not likely to look...
It's not in here.
Yeah. We're not likely to look into the television camera and say, this day, this time, meet us there.
Yeah.
But more importantly than what you and I are not going to do, at least as things sit today, that line in the sand is perhaps different for every single person. Now, I say as it exists now. Because if we got 100 people together and we went down the line and said, where's yours and where's yours and where's yours and where's yours, we're going to get different answers. However, it is possible. So basically, Nicholas, the reality is we don't have an answer for you. Let me be clear about that before we close out the show. We don't have a hard and fast answer. But it's always possible that there will be a precipitating decision or action by the federal government where spontaneously 20, 30, 40% say, that's it. That's the line. If I was questioning where the line in the sand is, I know it today.
And keep in mind, in the, during the Revolutionary War, the government at the time, the British government, the king, they stopped the import of guns. They banned various uses of the guns. And then finally, at Concord, Lexington, they were on their way to seize the gunpowder and the ball ammo, the ammunition and powder. And that was the line on the sand for them. This is a little bit, this is quite a bit different, because there you had, you didn't really have to worry about technology. Everybody was on the same playing field. Now, if there were any sort of an uprising against the government, you have to realize we're talking about the most advanced military in the world, where there's what, like 3 million people in the military or something like that right now? Those 3 million people, with all of their advancements in technology, are at least good for every 10 regular citizens that are fat and out of shape and own guns but don't know tactics, don't have technology. I mean, come on. It would be, if you haven't read the book Patriots, it's an interesting novel by James Wesley Rawls.
Yes, yes.
Patriots is good. I actually, I have a copy of the book. I listened to it on audiobook. So, very interesting, but I can say there's no line in the sand. We're not going to be able to tell you about that, and I have to say that I agree with Dave where if that day comes, it's going to be something where the government will finally say, okay, we believe we've got everybody far enough in the corner. Now this is how we're going
to
do it.
And I don't think it's possible to predict how big or small that precipitating incident could be. It might simply be one guy being shot on camera. And it causes an explosion.
And it could start with the cops. We may have already seen it happen. Okay.
Don't forget to email us at daveandbillshow@gmail.com, and we'll talk to you next week. Take care. Thanks for being here.